Alright, Chag Sameach again.
Chag Sameach.
And we're here in Jerusalem for the last holy day, Pesach 2:14. It was a fast week, but a really, really good week. And we've been kind of having a theme of surrender, getting closer to Yahweh. And the message I'm going to give today, it's called Lessons from the Exodus, Leaving Behind Our Golden Calf. Lessons from the Exodus, Leaving Behind Our Golden Calf. Because when you think about it, at this time of the year of the Exodus, the miracles that Yahweh did of the original Exodus, I mean, unbelievable miracles, and I'm going to read some of them over here. And then, how quickly, after those miracles, that the Israelites turned back. There had to be something there. And we need to analyze that a little bit in our lives today to see what we can learn from that, not to make the same mistakes. As we know from Corinthians, it says all these things were for our example. So I want to start in Exodus, the 8th chapter, and go through some of the plagues that Yahweh did to clearly show that the people, without a shadow of a doubt, knew what Yahweh was doing there. Exodus 8 and verse 1. It says, and Yahweh said to Moses, go to Pharaoh and say to him, so says Yahweh, send away my people that they may serve me. And if you refuse to send them away, behold, I am about to smite all your territory with frogs. And the river will swarm with frogs. And they will go up and enter into your house and into your bedroom and on your couch and into your servant's house and on your people and into your ovens and into your kneading troughs. All the frogs will come up on you and on your people and on your servants. And Yahweh said to Moses, say to Aaron, stretch out your hand with your staff over the rivers, over the canals, and over the pools, and bring up frogs on the land of Egypt. And Aaron stretched out his hand over the waters of Egypt, and the frogs came up and covered the land. And when we look at the plagues that came down, you know, I mean, they were pretty big plagues. Can you imagine living with frogs everywhere? Even your oven, you open up your oven to cook, and frogs are jumping out. You know, lice, flies, disease, boils, all the things. They were pretty heavy stuff. And then verse 16, it says, and Yahweh said to Moses, say to Aaron, stretch out your staff and strike the dust of the earth and let it become lice in all the land of Egypt. And they did so, and Aaron stretched out his hand with his staff and struck the dust of the earth, and the lice were on man and beast. All the dust of the earth became lice in the land of Egypt. And the priests performed with their secret arts to bring forth lice, and they could not. And the lice were on man and on beast. And the priest said to Pharaoh, it is the finger of Elohim. And Pharaoh's heart was hardened, and he did not listen to them, as Yahweh had said. Then we drop down to Exodus 9, starting in verse 1. And Yahweh said to Moses, go into Pharaoh and say to him, so says Yahweh, the Elohim of the Hebrews, send away my people that they may serve me. And if you refuse to send away and you still hold on to them, behold, the hand of Yahweh is going to be on your livestock in the field, on the horses, on the donkeys, on the camels, on the herds, on the flocks, a very heavy pestilence. And Yahweh will make a distinction between Israel's livestock and Egypt's livestock. Also, all that belongs to the sons of Israel, not a thing will die. And Yahweh set a time saying, tomorrow Yahweh will do this thing in the land. And Yahweh did this thing, and the next day and all the livestock of Egypt died. And from the livestock of the sons of Israel, not one died. And Pharaoh sent, and behold, not even one was dead from Israel's livestock. And Pharaoh's heart was hardened, and he did not send away the people. So here we see that not only is Yahweh doing these plagues on Egypt, but now he's sanctifying. He's making a clear distinction. He's setting apart his people from setting apart the other people. And unfortunately, as we're going to see, Yahweh set the people apart, but the people didn't want to be set apart, you know? And that's part of going back to the golden calf. If we go down to verse 8, and Yahweh said to Moses and to Aaron, take for yourself the fullness of your hands of soot from the furnace, and let Moses sprinkle it toward the heaven before Pharaoh's eyes. And let it become dust on all the land of Egypt, and let it become boils breaking out into sores on man and on livestock in all the land of Egypt. And they took soot of the furnace and stood before Pharaoh, and Moses sprinkled it toward the heavens, and it became a boil breaking out into sores on man and on livestock. And the priests were not able to stand before Moses because of the boils, for the boils were on the priests and on all the Egyptians. Another thing we see is progressively it's getting worse. You know, that where it started out, even the plagues that Yahweh was bringing, the priests were able to imitate the same way that Satan is able to imitate sometimes. But as it's going on, Yahweh is separating more and more. And now even the priests are getting boils on them. And then we see in verse 13, and Yahweh said to Moses, get up early in the morning and stand before Pharaoh and say to him, so says Yahweh the Elohim of the Hebrews, send away my people that they may serve me. For at this time I am going to send all my plagues to your heart and your servants and on your people, so that they may know that none is like me in all the land. For now I have sent forth my hand and have stricken you and your people with pestilence, and you have been destroyed from the earth. And for this reason I have made you stand, in order to cause you to see my power and in order to declare my name in all the land. And then we go down to verse 27. And Pharaoh sent and called Moses and Aaron and said to him, I have sinned this time. Yahweh is the righteous one, and I and my people the wicked ones. So we see now as it's going along, Pharaoh, from fear of these things, because as they're progressively getting worse, and sometimes that happens with us as believers, we start out doing something wrong. Yahweh will kind of gently give us a crisis from it. But as that crisis gets worse, sometimes we get fear and then we start to wonder. And that's what it is. So now, here it is, Pharaoh, when he's fearing, he's saying, okay, I made a mistake. We're the wrong ones, you're the right ones. But yet, when we drop down to verse 33, as soon as the plague left, what happens? And Moses went out from Pharaoh from the city, and he spread out his hands to Yahweh, and the thunder and the hail ceased, and the rain was not poured out toward the earth. And Pharaoh saw that the rain and the hail and the thunder had ceased, and he continued to sin, and he made his heart heavy. He and his servants, and Pharaoh's heart was made strong, and he did not send away the sons of Israel, as Yahweh had said, by the hand of Moses. So one thing that we see is in the lesson here is that if people are motivated by only fear without faith, once the thing that's causing the fear is gone, what happens? Your faith isn't there, so you're not going to follow through. And that's the big lesson, as we see even with Pharaoh, that as it's happening, and he's seeing it, he's getting all afraid, and then he's saying to Moses, okay, we're the bad ones, okay, it can happen, but when Yahweh takes the plague away, then all of a sudden. And I think it's the same thing that happens sometimes to believers, that sometimes we come into the faith, and some come in because of fear. They read about the end times, and they're all worried about the end times, or something like 9-1-1. They said the week after 9-1-1, there were more people that came to church than ever in the history of the country. But then they said 1 month or 2 months later, I forget a short amount of time, there were less people than even before 9-1-1. And that's why we say that miracles and fear, it may be a short-term motivation, but it's not a long-term solution. Because without faith, as we're going to read here when we get later into Hebrews 3, without mixed with faith, what will happen? It will never lead to anything. So fear may temporarily motivate somebody to something, but it doesn't change the heart. It doesn't change somebody's heart. And then, of course, after this, what happens? We have the locusts and the darkness, the death of the firstborn. It gets worse and worse and worse, and to the point where the Egyptians can't take anymore. So they let them go. So now it is that the Israelites, though, they saw 10 plagues. I mean, they've seen it. They're living there. And not only plagues that came, but they saw the distinction. They saw that there weren't plagues where they were. They saw that there's darkness over here in Egypt during the daylight, 24 hours a day for 3 days. But there wasn't darkness where they are. And now comes the big one, the parting of the Red Sea. So we get to Exodus 14. I'm going to start in verse 5. And it was told to the king of Egypt that the people had fled, and the heart of Pharaoh and his servants was turned as to the people, and they said, what is this we have done? For we have sent away Israel from serving us. And he prepared his chariots and took his people with him. And he took 600 chosen chariots and all the chariots of Egypt and officers over all of them. And Yahweh hardened Pharaoh, king of Egypt's heart. And he pursued the sons of Israel, and the sons of Israel were going out with a high hand. And the Egyptians pursued them, and they overtook them camping by the sea, all the horses and the chariots of Pharaoh, and his horsemen and his army by Pi-hahiroth before Baal-Zephon. And Pharaoh came near, and the sons of Israel raised their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians were pulling up after them, and they were greatly afraid. And the sons of Israel cried to Yahweh, and they said to Moses, "Were there no graves in Egypt that you have taken us to die in the wilderness? What is this you have done to us to bring us out of Egypt?" So can you imagine? They just saw these 10 plagues. They just saw the firstborn dying. They saw that it said not one house did not have a person that wasn't dead. And instead of giving Yahweh the glory, instead of changing their hearts, what are they doing? They're complaining. They're bickering. And they're actually even accusing Yahweh. "Is this not the word which we spoke to you while in Egypt, saying, 'Go away from us and let us serve the Egyptians'? For it is good to us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness." What blasphemy. And Moses said to the people, "Do not be afraid. Take your stand and see the salvation," Yeshua, "of Yahweh, which he will prepare for you today. For as you see these Egyptians today, you shall not continue to see them again forever. Yahweh will fight for you, and you be silent." And Yahweh said to Moses, "Why do you cry to me? Speak to the sons of Israel and let them pull up stakes. And you raise your staff and stretch out your hand over the sea and divide it so the sons of Israel may go in the midst of the sea on dry ground. And behold, I am making strong the heart of the Egyptians, and they will go after them. And I will be honored through Pharaoh and through his armies, through his chariots and through his horsemen. And the Egyptians shall know that I am Yahweh in my being honored through Pharaoh, through his chariots and through his horsemen." And the messenger of Elohim withdrew, the one going before the camp of Israel. And he went behind them, and the pillar of cloud withdrew from before them, and it stood behind them. And it came between the camp of Egypt and the camp of Israel. And it was cloudy and dark. And it lit up the night, and this one did not come near to that one all the night. And Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and Elohim and Yahweh caused the sea to go back by a strong east wind all night. And he made the sea dry land, and the waters divided. And the sons of Israel came into the middle of the sea on dry ground, the waters being a wall to them from the right and from the left. And the Egyptians pursued, and all the horses of Pharaoh came after them, his chariots and his horsemen into the middle of the sea. And it happened in the morning watch, Yahweh looked on the camp of the Egyptians in the pillar of fire and cloud, and he confused the camp of the Egyptians. And he took off the wheels of their chariots, and he made them drive with difficulty. And the Egyptians said, "I will flee from the face of Israel, for Yahweh is fighting for them against the Egyptians." And Yahweh said to Moses, "Stretch out your hand over the sea, and let the waters return on the Egyptians, on their chariots, and on their horsemen." And Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the sea returned to its usual flow at the turning of the morning, and the Egyptians were fleeing to meet it. And Yahweh shook off the Egyptians into the middle of the sea. And the waters returned and covered the chariots and the horsemen, together with all the army of Pharaoh, those going after them into the sea. And not even one was left among them. And the sons of Israel walked on dry ground in the middle of the sea, the waters being a wall for them from their right and from their left. And Yahweh saved Israel on that day from the hand of Egypt. And Israel saw the Egyptians dead on the seashore. And Israel saw the great hand with which Yahweh worked against Egypt. And the people feared Yahweh, and they believed in Yahweh and his servant Moses. So like we said, well, where's the motivation coming from? It's not coming from faith. It's coming from fear. And as long as the fear was there, they seemed to follow. The minute the fear was gone, what happens? And you can't live a life like that. I don't think fear is necessarily a bad thing to draw you to Yahweh. You know, that many people come to faith and they realize we're living in the end time and they see these things. And it's something that motivates you to come to Yahweh. But if you don't build faith somewhere along the line, you will never make it. Just like the Israelites. And we see here a whole generation, not a few people, a whole generation, several million people perished in the wilderness because their motivation was fear, their motivation wasn't faith. Exodus 15, verse 22. And Moses made Israel to pull up out of the Sea of Reeds, and they went out into the wilderness of Shur, and they went into the wilderness 3 days and did not find water. And they came to Marah, and they were not able to drink water from Marah, for it was bitter. Therefore one called its name Marah. And the people murmured against Moses, saying, "What shall we drink?" And he cried to Yahweh, and Yahweh showed him a tree. And he threw it into the water, and the water became sweet. And he made a statue and an ordinance for them there, and he tested them there. And he said, "If you carefully listen to the voice of Yahweh your Elohim, and do what is right in his eyes, and you give ear to his commandments, and keep all his statutes, I will not put on you all the diseases which I have put on Egypt, for I am Yahweh Rapha. We go down to Exodus 16, verse 1. And they pulled up stakes from Elim, and the congregation of the sons of Israel came into the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after they're going out from the land of Egypt. So this is exactly 1 month later. And all the congregation of the sons of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron in the wilderness. And the sons of Israel said to them, "Would that we have died by the hand of Yahweh in the land of Egypt, and are sitting by the flesh pots, and are eating bread to satisfaction. For you have brought us out into this wilderness to kill all the assembly with hunger." So it's not a one-time thing. This is something from the very beginning of this journey, all the way through, that they are continuously not seeing Yahweh's blessing that he's given to them. We see no spirit of appreciation for anything. And that's like when I was giving the message on accusing spirits. And I said, an accusing spirit doesn't even see a blessing as a blessing. How could they ever see a trial as a blessing? You know, if you get a blessing and your thing is, oh, only that, or oh, I have to pick it up. If you can't even see Yahweh's blessing as a blessing, how will you ever see a trial? And here the Egyptians or the Israelites are in the same situation. They're not seeing anything. I mean, the greatest miracles that Yahweh was doing in the history of the Bible, taking this nation out, and they should be glorifying him right and left. They're not doing it. They're not doing it because they didn't leave their golden calf behind, as we're going to see. They took with them their lifestyle. They took with them their paganism. They took with them their fear, and they took with them their self-motivation. Exodus 17. And all the congregation of the sons of Israel pulled up stakes from the wilderness of Sin, according to their journeys by the mouth of Yahweh. And they camped in Rephidim, and there was no water for the people to drink there. And the people fought with Moses and said, "Give us water that we may drink." And Moses said to him, "Why do you fight with me? Why do you tempt Yahweh?" And the people thirsted there for water, and the people murmured against Moses and said, "Why then have you caused us to come up to Egypt to kill us, and my sons and my livestock with thirst?" And Moses cried to Yahweh, saying, "What shall I do to this people? Yet a little, and they will stone me." And Yahweh said to Moses, "Pass on in front of the people and take with you some of the elders of Israel, and taking your hand your staff, with you smote the Nile and go. Behold, I will stand before you there on the rock in Horeb, and you will smite the rock, and water will come out of it, and the people will drink." And Moses did so before the eyes of the elders of Israel, and one called the name of the place Massah and Meribah, because out of the contention of the sons of Israel, and because of their testing of Yahweh, saying, "Is Yahweh in our midst or not?" So now, here it is, during the good times, right? Everything is great. But any time a trial came, even the littlest of trials, they're saying Yahweh isn't even among us. And that's the one thing I say, when you look in life, every single thing that happens comes from Yahweh, the good and the bad. You know, and the good are there for blessings and for us to be able to share with others. But when we go through trials, they're there for purification. They're there to train us. They're there to help us to be better servants. They're there to send us through the baptism of fire. And when we complain about anything, there's only one person we're complaining about, Yahweh. You know, because here it is. This Passover 2:14, this is the place Yahweh provided for us to meet in. So if I have any complaints, the lighting isn't good, or this isn't good, or this is... I'm only complaining against Yahweh who provided it. And that's anything. Any situation you're in, and like I said, I could really relate to the Apostle Paul when he says, I was in times that I was in plenty and times I was in want. You know, and there's times I've been on a mission trip where I'm sleeping on straw out somewhere or dirt floors, which was fine. And there's other times where Yahweh is blessing you and giving you a free hotel in a 5-star Hyatt hotel. And I've been to both sides of it. And there really is a blessing to both sides of it. You know, and maybe the 5-star hotel is more comfortable, you know, and I did enjoy it. I wouldn't say I didn't. But the blessing of being on the straw floor with brethren in their home and them sharing everything you have was just as much of a blessing to me as the 5-star hotel. And this is something, if we don't learn this lesson from the Exodus about leaving our golden calf behind, if we don't learn it, we will not go into the promised land. Because we see this was the thing that kept them out. That, like I said, they saw with their eyes, but it wasn't mixed with faith. There was absolutely no faith on their part. Deuteronomy 6. Deuteronomy 6 and verse 10. Says, it shall be when Yahweh your Elohim shall bring you into the land which he has swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and to Jacob, to give to you great and good cities which you have not built, and houses full of every good thing which you have not filled, and wells dug which you did not dig, vineyards and olive groves which you did not plant, and you shall eat and be satisfied. Then you shall be on guard that you do not forget Yahweh who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slaves. You shall fear Yahweh your Elohim, and you shall serve him, and you shall swear by his name. You shall not go after other gods of the Elohim of the people who are around you. And like I said, it's an important lesson that we can't only get zealous for the work of Yahweh when we see the Twin Towers falling, or we see something happening that maybe war is going to come with Russia and America. Now, I'm going to study more, and now I'm going to get more zealous. Then maybe the next week it kind of dissipates, and what do? We go back fishing, you know, like with Peter in the New Testament. We have to have that zealousness, not because of what's going on around us. We have to have that zealousness because of Yahweh's Spirit within us, because we believe in him. And whether on the outside we see it getting closer to that time of the end or we don't, really makes no difference. Because when we're baptized and we enter covenant relationship, our covenant is not based on how quick the end time comes or doesn't come. Our covenant is based in faith in Yahweh, in trusting him for everything. Just like we've been saying, the burnt offering, complete surrender, the grain offering, you know, that he is our provider, the peace offering. Now we're one with him and we partake in it. And then the guilt offering and the sin offering, you know, that we accept the blood of Messiah to cover our sins because we know that we are all sinners and we can't do it ourselves. So we need to learn this lesson from it, that we don't want to have the spirit of unappreciation, that we need to be appreciative of Yahweh for all things. So now we get to Exodus 32, the golden calf. Starting in verse 1. And the people saw that Moses delayed to come down from the mountain, and the people gathered up to Aaron. We were talking about this yesterday. When the covering is gone, you know, the trouble that happens. And the people gathered up to Aaron and they said to him, rise up, make for us gods who may go before our face. As for this Moses, the man who brought us up from the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him. And Aaron said to them, break off the rings of gold which are in the ears of your wives, your sons and your daughters, and bring them to me. And all the people broke off the rings of gold in their ears, and they brought to Aaron. And they took them from their hand and formed it with an engraving tool. And he made it a casted calf. And they said, these are your gods, O Israel, who brought you up from the land of Egypt. And Aaron saw it, and he built an altar before it. And Aaron called and set a feast to Yahweh tomorrow. So again, they're calling these idols Yahweh. They're mixing it together. They're taking the paganism they knew in Egypt. And Yahweh didn't tell them yet how to worship him. So they're just taking the old paganism. They're bringing along their golden calf. And they're making something new, the syncretism of the two. And they rose early in the morning and they offered burnt offerings and brought it near peace offerings. And the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to make merry. And Yahweh spoke to Moses and said, come, go down, for your people whom you've caused to come up from Egypt are corrupted. They have quickly turned off the way which I commanded them. They have made for themselves a casted calf and have bowed down to it and they sacrificed to it. And they said, these are your gods, O Israel, who brought you up from the land of Egypt. And Yahweh said to Moses, I have seen this people, and behold, it is a stiff-necked people. And you know, we've seen through the years, many times, people come and go, unfortunately. Sometimes people come to Sukkot, or they come to whatever. And sometimes they seem like really nice people. And you wonder, what happened to so-and-so, or why did they leave, you know? And you're thinking something caused it. Something was the cause of it. And really, many times, there really is no cause. It's the parable of the sower and the seed. Some seed is just on rocky ground, and it has no root to it. And one thing is certain, that if somebody is coming as a curiosity seeker, and they haven't left their golden calf behind, what's going to happen? They're bringing with them that baggage, and now they're using that golden calf, but instead of calling it whatever they called it before, they called the golden calf Yahweh, just like the Israelites did. But if it's not built on faith, if there's not real belief, what's going to happen? Within a short period of time, could be a few months, it could be a year or two, they're going to do exactly what the Israelites did. They'll go back to the only thing they knew. And unfortunately, like we'll see here as we read it, our calling has to be more than just the knowledge that Yahweh's given to us. Of course, the knowledge is based on truth, Yahweh's name, His Sabbath, you know, the things He tells us for worship. This is all what sanctifies us from the world. But if it's not mixed with faith, if there's not this true faith that without a shadow of a doubt, we know that He is and He's a rewarder of those who diligently seek Him. And if you don't live by that every day of your life, you'll be just like this. And that's what I want to talk about in a little bit. You know, the golden calf that each of us brings. You know, the golden calf that each brings. So first, let's go to Numbers 14. Because let's see the end result of the Israelites not leaving their golden calf behind. Numbers 14. In verse 1. All the congregation lifted up their voice and cried, and the people wept during the night. This is right after Joshua and the Caleb and the other 10 spies come back. And what did they say? Oh yeah, it's a good land. It's a land with milk and honey. But there's giants in the land and they're going to eat us apart. And now the people are weeping and crying. You know, and they're not believing Yahweh. And all the sons of Israel murmured against Moses once again and against Aaron. And all the congregation said to them, oh, that we had died in the land of Egypt or in the wilderness. Oh, that we had died. And like I said, whenever, no matter what the trial we're going through, when we complain, when we murmur, we're blaspheming Yahweh. Because whatever situation you're in, whatever is happening in your life, Yahweh has allowed it. But my belief, you know, when we talk about empowering beliefs and disempowering beliefs, like I said, my most empowering belief is Romans 8:28. All things work for the good of those who love Yahweh and those who are called according to purpose. So I know with how dire the thing could be, Yahweh allowed it for my good. And that's the point of it. Not to murmur, not to blame. And like I said, it doesn't matter who I'm blaming. You know, if a terrorist came and killed one of my family members, and I'm blaming the terrorist, you know who I'm blaming? I'm blaming Yahweh. Because Yahweh allowed that to happen. So I have to look and see why Yahweh allowed this, and I have to look for the meaning of how it's going to make me a better servant of Yahweh, how it's going to make me a better believer, but never murmuring like this. Oh, that we died in the wilderness. And why is Yahweh bringing us into this land to fall by the sword? Our wives and our infants have become a prey. Is it not good for us to return to Egypt? And they said each to his brother, let us give a leader and return to Egypt. And Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before all the assembly of the congregation of the sons of Israel. And Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, of whom they spied out the land, tore their garments. And they spoke to all the congregation of the sons of Israel, saying, the land into which we passed to spy it out is an exceedingly good land. If Yahweh has delighted in us, then He will bring us into the land, and He will give it to us, a land which is flowing with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against Yahweh. And you do not fear the people of the land, for they are our bread. The grain offering, remember, they are our bread. What means they are our food. You know, Yahweh's going to provide. Yahweh will care for it. He says their defense has turned away from them. And in the Hebrew, that word for defense, it's tzitzel. It literally means shade, shadow. So Yahweh is the shadow of protection. And what He's saying is that shadow left. You know, their defense left, their shadow left, they're vulnerable, their covering left. You know, Yahweh has given them to us. Don't fear them. And the congregation said to stone them with stones. Can you imagine? Here are these two zealous, courageous, fearless men that are talking in the behalf of Yahweh. And they're saying, stone them. And the glory of Yahweh appeared in the tent of meeting to all the sons of Israel. And Yahweh said to Moses, until when will this people despise me? You know? And how long when we hear sometimes brethren complaining and complaining and complaining. And like he's saying, how long will this people despise me? And to when will they continue not to believe in me for all the signs I've done in their midst? And how quick we forget. You know, you talk to new people sometimes and they're telling you how they know this is the truth. And they're giving you miracles that happened to them. And you're like, wow, what a miracle, what a testimony. And sometimes 6 months later, a year later, so-and-so left. Where'd the testimony go? Where'd the miracle go? I remember when I was a new believer, I was only a few months in the faith. And I had ants in the back of my house, a big thing of ants. So I boiled water to throw on the ants. And the boiling water fell out of my hands and fell on my foot. And immediately my foot bubbled up with blisters. I probably had the worst degree burn you can get. And what did I think of doing immediately? I called the elder to pray for me over the telephone. And as that elder was praying for me on the phone, those blisters disappeared from my foot. And I have several miracles like that happened to me. Big time miracles when I was first called. And I never forgot them. So now if something bad happens, I don't say, well, Yahweh left me. Because if he called me, if he saved me from Satan, even before I was baptized, when I was first being called, when I first started opening up the Bible to read it, I'm driving on the highway. I was in a courier service with my dad. I'm in a van. I'm going about 60 miles an hour on the highway with no shoulder. And an 18-wheeler truck, lorry, was in front of me with his doors open. And there's a pipe in there about 4 or 5 feet long. It weighed about 30 pounds. It comes out of that truck, through my windshield, through my dashboard, and was that far from going through me, which was a miracle. I know a cherub had it, because a pipe coming out like that would never come like a dart. And if it came sideways, I was dead. And I have a picture of that van to this day, because I know I died on that day. I would have been dead. If it wasn't for Yahweh calling me, I died on that day. So now when something else bad in my life happens, I can't forget. I already died. I have nothing to live for but Yahweh. So it's all His. He can take whatever it is. You know, like Job said, you know, I came naked into the world, naked I go out. Blessed be Yahweh. And we can't forget these things. We can't forget during the trials of the miracles He did. We can't forget how He took each of us out of our Egypt. You know, when we came from sin. And that's unfortunately what happens. People are so quick to forget when they see. And that's why I say fear is not a good motivation, maybe for a short time. Because what happens is, if you don't mix it with faith, when the trial comes, now that's your reality. So what good is the miracle if it's only your reality for that minute it happened? Because your next reality is something bad happening. And then you're quitting on Yahweh. And one thing that Yahweh says, like He says, when you make a vow to me, you fulfill it quickly. I don't take pleasure in fools. Yahweh doesn't take pleasure in fools. And if we're going to one day be here saying, Yahweh, we love you. I'm saying to you. And the next day I'm denying Him, whether it's by physical words or by my actions. Yahweh's saying, he's a fool. I don't, what am I going to do with this guy? One day he's saying he's dedicated to me, and one day he's over here blaming me for what's happening. So it's so important. We have to learn. We have to leave our golden calf behind. So let me drop down here now to verse 18. Yahweh is slow to anger and of great mercy, bearing away iniquity and transgression. And by no means will he clear the guilty, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the sons to the third and fourth generation. So the whole false grace that Yahweh will just forget it, it ain't there. He says it right here. By no ways will he clear the guilty. And when our sins are forgiven, he's not clearing the guilty. Yeshua is paying the penalty, you know? So there's still a penalty being paid, or it wouldn't be justice. It's just that he's paying it for us. But justice is still being served. I pray, forgive the iniquity of this people according to the greatness of your mercy. And as you have gone with this people from Egypt, even until now. And Yahweh said, I have forgiven according to your word. But as I live, all the earth will be filled with the glory of Yahweh. And as for these men who are seeking, who are seeing my glory and my miracles, which I've done in Egypt and in the wilderness, and have tried me these 10 times and have not listened to my voice, they shall not see the land that I've sworn to their fathers. Yea, not one of those who provoked me shall see it. And my servant Caleb, because there is another spirit in him, and he is fully following me, I will bring him into the land which he has gone, and his seed shall possess it. And the Bible is very clear. To much is given, much is expected, and the more is given, the more will be required. And I know, to most of the people out there, they haven't been given much. And Yahweh can do whatever he wants with them. He can have mercy. He can look at their hearts. But I know with believers that his Holy Spirit has opened our mind. I know we have a great accountability. And that for us, there's no reason in the world when we know Yahweh, when we've seen him, when he speaks to us, when he's answered our prayers. And like I said, every one of us has been called out of our own spiritual Egypt. That we should blaspheme him by ever questioning him. By ever murmuring and complaining about situations. By ever doubting his existence or doubting him in our life when he's done so much. And like he said here, and he swore in his wrath, not one of those persons that have seen it and doubted him will enter his promised land. And here we are. Every one of us has seen it. Which true believer that has the Spirit of Yahweh can say he's never seen the Spirit of Yahweh or the miracles of Yahweh in his life? I pity the person that would say that. Every one of us in our own way have seen it. But because Caleb, what? There was another spirit. And we have to be like that. We have to have another spirit. Like we said, we don't want the spirit of the world. We don't want the spirit of fear and doubt. We want the spirit of Yahweh, which is the spirit of love, you know, and of faith and of a sound mind. It's not the spirit of fear. It's not the spirit of doubt. Let's go to Hebrews 3, because now Hebrews 3 picks up the story from here. Hebrews, the third chapter. Because this wasn't just like Moses, you know, we talked about it. Moses missed out on the promised land, not the kingdom. I made a mistake in the other message. Moses missed out on the physical promised land, not on Yahweh's kingdom. But these people, they missed out on the kingdom. I'm not making a mistake there, because Yahweh said it, they will not enter his rest. All of those people who perished in the wilderness will not be in the kingdom of Yahweh. Hebrews 3, in verse 7. Because of this, even as the Holy Spirit says today, if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts to provoke him, as the murmurers did in the day of temptation in the wilderness. There where your fathers tempted me, even though they saw my works 40 years. Can you imagine? Tempting him 40 years. Because of this, I was angry with that generation and said, they always go astray in their heart, and they did not know my ways. So I swore in my wrath, they will not enter my rest. Beware therefore, my brethren, lest there be in any of you an evil heart which does not believe, and you will be cut off from the living Elohim. But search your hearts each day until the day which is called the day that Yeshua is coming back, that not any one of you be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. For we have become partakers of Messiah if truly from the beginning to the very end we hold steadfast to this true covenant. As in the saying, today if you hear even the echoes of his voice, do not harden your heart to anger. So that's what we hear, the echoes. They were there originally, but the word is an echo. It's read to every generation. And we're hearing the echoes of that, which is just as real. Who were those who heard and provoked him? Was it not those who came out of Egypt through Moses, although not all of them? But with whom was he angry 40 years? Was it not with the one sinning, whose bones lay in the wilderness? And to whom did he swear they would not enter his rest, except to those not obeying? So we see that they were not able to enter because of unbelief. Therefore, let us fear, lest while the promise of entering into his rest remains, lest some among you find that you are falling short from entering. For indeed we have had the good news preached to us, even as they also. But the word did not profit those hearing, because it not having been mixed with faith in the ones who heard. And then he says again, he swore in his wrath that they will not enter his works. So we see here, this was a grave mistake. A grave mistake that kept them out of the promised land. By not having faith, by not mixing it with faith. And this is the problem. In the world we live in today, we know that Babylon, we know America is the country of Babylon, but we know that Babylon has brought this spirit of unbelief to the world. It's a spirit that wants you to trust in the system. It wants you to trust in the government. It wants you to trust in all these things. And it's so easy to have a spirit of unbelief. But you have to fight it. You have to fight it every day of your life. And like Hebrews 11:6, we went over that before. You know, that faith, maybe I'll even read it again. But without faith, it is impossible to please Yahweh. For it is right that the one drawing near to Yahweh should believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. So how on earth can you expect Yahweh to bless you if you even doubt that he exists? How on earth can you do that? It talks about it in the book of Jacob. The double-minded man is unstable in all his ways, and don't think that if you're double-minded, that Yahweh will give you anything. You know, can you imagine that we're supposed to be his examples on this earth? We're supposed to, people are supposed to see the Messiah in us. And shame on us that some people would even doubt if Yahweh exists, or doubt that the Messiah was on the earth, or whatever it is. But that's exactly like I said yesterday, where Satan wants to get you is, all he wants to do is get you to doubt. Because once you start to doubt, it will lead to another doubt. It's a cancer that will spread for your body. But we must live, believe in the promises, and live to the Spirit, not the flesh. You have to live to the Spirit and not the flesh. And everybody has a golden calf. Everybody has a golden calf. And we need to look in our lives and see what is our golden calf and leave it behind. Because face it, in the world we live in, if you logically try to figure out, it will never work. You know, I came from a congregation that did not teach the correct principle of tithing. And they taught a first tithe, a second tithe, and a third tithe. And in third tithe years, I'm giving 30% of my money to the congregation beside offerings. You know, so it's about 35%. And when you're in close to a 40% tax bracket, because I was tithing on my gross, that means before anything, I had about 75% of my money gone. And I wasn't making a ton of money, but I was doing pretty good. But do you know something? Even though it was incorrect, because my heart was right, every third tithe year I had, I wound up with more money at the end of the year than I ever had in my life. And I couldn't figure it out. That's why I say, if you try to figure tithing out on paper, a lot of times you can't. You can't figure it out because it won't work a lot of times. But it's not to figure out on paper. That's not faith. That's doubt. You have to trust in Yahweh. And this is the problem. It's the problem many times I hear with people in Babylon. How could we leave? How could you do it without money? Where can you live? Where can I work? These are the same thing the Israelites said when they were coming out of Egypt. You wanted to kill us. This isn't a land of milk and honey. We want to go back to Egypt. The same way many leave Babylon and go right back to Babylon. You know, it was no different for me. When we left America, I had no money. We had nothing. We didn't know how we were going to survive. But we knew one thing. We weren't turning back. We're going to trust in Yahweh. And I knew at the end of the day, I knew with all my heart that it would work. Because I knew that Yahweh would back me, because I knew there weren't many people that were doing it. And I can tell you that 100%. I don't know how. I don't know where. But I know why. I know that if you trust in Yahweh and you leave the system, as he says, and you come out of the paganism and you come out of the worldliness and you're walking that narrow road, Yahweh is going to bless you. He will. There's no doubt about it. But if you have doubt and you're trying to figure it out in your mind how it's going to work, without your social security check, without your medicine from the government, then you're doing exactly what the Israelites did. You're not doubting man, you're doubting Yahweh. You have to trust in him. So my question is, what is your golden calf? Everybody has one. What is your golden calf? What are you taking with you when you're coming into the congregation of Yahweh? What are you bringing with you from the world? Is your golden calf education? Is your golden calf tradition? Is your golden calf pagan celebrations? Some people don't want to leave birthdays behind. You know, I say, you could look in history and you could see that the Israelites and Jews never celebrated birthdays. You could see that in the Bible that gives hundreds and hundreds of different dates. Dates of kings and dates of this. And they give births. The birth of Yeshua, the birth of Samuel, the birth of Moses, the birth of John the Baptist. And yet never one date. Because they don't want us to celebrate. The day of one's death is better than the day of one's birth. So you don't see it. Is that your golden calf? Can't give it up? Maybe some women make up. You know, like I said, except for vanity. Give me one reason. why a woman would want to try to make her look better to other men, you know, that she's not married to. Is that your golden calf? Is it makeup? Is it money? I've had people tell me they simply don't want to give money up, you know. So they're living in some kind of sin, but I'll give extra money to the church, you know. Like I said, some people that want to work on Shabbat, but I'll give the money to Yahweh, as if Yahweh's some form of prostitute. It's not acceptable. You can't bring your golden calf into Yahweh's congregation. TV? Is it your house? There's people that had said, I'll never leave my house no matter what. Unfortunately, the promised land isn't wherever your house is if you're not living in Israel. And even then, it probably isn't the house you'll live in for eternity. For some people, it's their children, their husband, their parents, their family members. You know, what is your golden calf? For some people, it's pride, fear, selfishness. It's the thing they're taking with them from the paganized world into the congregation. And now what they're trying to do, just like with the golden calf, remember, they put all the gold together and they called it Yahweh. So they're trying to syncretize it. They're trying to bring the paganism, the thing they don't want to leave behind, their golden calf, and they want to decorate it with some of Yahweh's truths. And then they want to call it the word of Yahweh, and it's not. You have to leave your golden calf behind. If you saw 9 miracles and lacked one, do you forget the 9 miracles? And like I said, to have no thankfulness, the gift, the spirit of ingratitude is one of the worst, if not the worst thing in the world. Because if we don't appreciate every day of our life, like I said, first thing, the eyes open before anything, on your hands and knees, thanking Yahweh, giving you another day of life. For me, as soon as I thank Him for life, I thank Him that I'm in His land. I thank Him for our house, our property, where we are, the work that He's given me to do here. And every single day I'm in Israel, because I know there's only so many days in my life. And you can figure it out. If the average lifespan is 70, times that by 365, and you'll see how many days you have in your life, you know, 18,000, whatever. And every day I'm here in the land is one day I'm not outside of it. And I know I'll die. I could die tomorrow, maybe I'll live through those years. But every day here, that's another day that I lived in this physical life in His land, and I thank Him for it. So are we building golden calves, or are we tearing them down? All of us, we've seen the miracles of Yahweh in our life. Are we thanking them for it every day? Are we trusting Him for everything? Are we trusting Him when we're sick instead of Obamacare, socialized medicine? Are we trusting Him for our provision, the grain offering? Or are we worried about our physical job? You know, are we trusting Him for our retirement? Or are we worried about, you know, the governmental subsidy of retirement? Everything has to be in Yahweh. We have to take away the golden calf. Fear and selfishness kept the Israelites out of the promised land. Jude 5, I will read that. That is one of the most sobering scriptures in the Bible. He says, "But I intend to remind you, though you once knew these things, that Elohim, having saved a people out of the land of Egypt, in the second place destroyed the ones not believing," which were 99% of them. Like I said, except for Caleb and Joshua, nobody 20 years and above entered that promised land. For one reason, for lack of faith, for not believing in the promises of Yahweh, for not giving Him credit, for murmuring. What was David's greatest sin? David, a man after Yahweh's own heart, right? And he committed adultery, he committed murder. Those are pretty bad sins, but that was not his worst sin. His worst sin was numbering the people. That was his worst sin before Yahweh. And you might look and say, what's so bad about that? He wanted to know how many people were there. He wanted to know how many people were there because he wanted to know how strong his army was against the other army. And he didn't need to know that, as we see in the Bible with Gideon. When Gideon came, and what happens? You know, he has a few thousand people and he says, well, we have a problem here. You know, they have how many thousands and we only got a couple. And Yahweh says, yeah, you got a problem here. You know, and Gideon says, yeah, we have too many. And Yahweh says, or Gideon says, we don't have enough. And Yahweh says, you have too many. It's like, huh? What? You know, they're both coming with the same problem from a different perspective. And what does Yahweh say? And then He takes only those 300 people that came. Love that story. We've been there. I love that place. Because we are like Gideon's army in the world today. There's so few of us that are like that. But that's what it is. That victory comes through Yahweh. We got to believe it. and all the great wars. Look at Hezekiah. You know, when Sennacherib is coming there and he's saying, you know, well, don't speak to the people in Hebrew because, and the man purposely speaks in Hebrew and says, where are the Elohim of these people? Where are the Elohim of these people? Don't you know that Hezekiah is lying to you? Yahweh's not going to protect you. Oh, yeah? What'd it take? One night, 185,000 soldiers dead. I like to say they woke up dead. Oxymoron. They didn't wake up, but they certainly were dead. 185,000. The same Elohim who did that, the same Elohim who parted the Red Sea, and some of us have seen it. We've been there. Not that we saw the parting of it, but we've seen the place. I've been there many times. So there's no doubt in my mind that he did it once, he could do it again, he could do anything he wants to. And the fact is, I'm not Yahweh. So if in my mind his plan isn't going according to what I want, big deal. His plan is going according to what he wants. And the only thing that matters is, I will trust him till the day I die. Because I know the thing that matters is when the kingdom comes. And it's up to him when he's going to bring the beast power in the end and all those things. He does give a sign so we know, and we're seeing a lot of those signs in the days we're living in. But the bottom line is, it will happen. You know, it will happen in Yahweh's timing, and every word of this book will come true. And the only way I will be there on the other side of this is if I believe it. But if I start to doubt after seeing the miracles that I've seen in my life, you know, and I say, you know, it's interesting, because one of the logical things sometimes with belief is just looking on the other side. Because I always say that to someone that's an atheist is trying to put doubts. I say, well, just logically think the other side. If Yahweh isn't there, if there was no Yahweh, then what? You know, how did we all get here? It's impossible. There is no alternative to it. And you just look at the other side. And I know in my life, there have been many times I've cast demons out of people. So if there's a demon, then there's got to be an angel. If there's a devil, there's got to be a Yahweh. It's that simple. And like I said, each of us have seen it in our own lives. But the minute it disappears, people forget really quick. They really, really forget. 2 Peter 2. 2 Peter 2 and verse 20. Because I'll tell you, for the brethren who have made the commitment to Yahweh, that have been immersed in his name, that have entered covenant relationship with him, this is no game. The same way Israel, they were separated from Egypt, and Yahweh made that separation, and Yahweh took them out of Egypt, and they didn't have their firstborn die, and he took them to Mount Sinai. And they had a greater accountability, though. And that's the reason why they all perished in the wilderness, because they saw with their eyes, and still they didn't believe. And for us, if we make that commitment to Yahweh and we turn back, it was better that we were never born, like it says with Judas. It was better if he was never born for that man than to be one of the 12, to walk with Yeshua for almost 3 years, and to actually be the one to betray him over to the authorities. 2 Peter 2 and verse 20. For if when they have escaped the pollutions of the world by the knowledge of our Master and Redeemer, Yeshua the Messiah, they become again entangled in the very same things and are overcome by them, their later end is worse than the beginning. Their golden calf. That's what I'm saying. You know, what is our golden calf? That's what Yahweh is saying. You have to get rid of the golden calf. Because if Yahweh takes you from those pollutions of the world, and he destroys your golden calf, and he brings you and sanctifies you away from this evilness, this wickedness out there. And then what do? You go back and dig up that golden calf. He says, the end is worse than the beginning. For it was better for them not to have known the way of righteousness than having recognized it to turn from the holy commandment delivered to them. But the word of the true proverb hath happened to them. The dog returns to his own vomit, also the sow that was washed to wallowing in the mud. Luke 9 and verse 57. Luke 9 and verse 57. And it happened as they were going in the way, one said to him, I will follow you wherever you may go, Master. And Yeshua said to him, the foxes have holes and the birds of the heaven have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere he may lay his head. And he said to another, follow me. But he said, Master, allow me to go first bury my father. But Yeshua said to him, leave the dead to bury their dead. But going out, you announce the kingdom of Yahweh. And another said, I will follow you, Master, but first allow me to take leave of those in my house. But Yeshua said to him, no man places his hand upon the handle of a plow and looks backward and is useful for the kingdom of Elohim. Now the man with the father, it wasn't that the father had died and he's telling him, don't go to the funeral. You know, what's happening is the father's older and he's saying, I need to care for my father. And he's saying, let the spiritually dead bury the dead. You have an important job to do. I'm calling you out of the world. You're one of 5 million. And like he says, no man who puts his hand to the plow and looks backward. What happens if you're a farmer? You know, you put your hand to the plow and look backward. That plow is going to go in every zigzag direction you can imagine. He says, no man that puts his hand to the plow and looks backward is useful to the kingdom of Elohim. We need to be looking ahead, not looking behind. Philippians 4, because there is a great work yet to do. Yahweh has done a great work in each of us. He's done a wonderful, marvelous work of calling us out of this world, of transforming our lives and our hearts. But I'm telling you, the greatest work is yet to come. Habakkuk 1:5, you know, when he says, oh, Father, look, this evil is happening and all these things, and where are you? And he says, don't worry, I will do a work in your day that you would not believe it if I told it to you. And that's why we're seeing that work. And I wouldn't have believed it if I didn't live to see it. But we're living it and we're seeing it. And like I say, the greatest work is yet to come. Philippians 4, starting in verse 4. Rejoice in Yahweh's always. Again, I say rejoice. You know, like I said, always having that spirit of appreciation. Always having that everything we're going through, even our trials, we're happy for. Let your humility be known to all men. Our Master is at hand. Do not worry about anything, but in everything, by prayer and by petition with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to Elohim. And the peace of Yahweh, which surpasses all understanding, will keep your hearts and your mind through Yeshua Messiah. We're talking about this yesterday. People go for all this other stuff. They're looking for false spiritualism. We're living in a time where there's all this Hinduism and meditation, and none of it is going to lead to real peace of heart. But you have to look for the peace of Yahweh, which surpasses all understanding, will keep through your hearts and mind through Yeshua Messiah. Only through the Holy Spirit dwelling in you and opening up your mind and having the reality of who Yahweh is and true belief in Him, that's the thing that gives you peace. Because we know, no matter what, we know that your life can't be taken. We know that you have eternal life living in you. And we know all we have to do is continue to believe that until the day we die and we'll be in His kingdom. Then in verse 11, he says, not that I speak as to need, for I have learned to be content in whatever state I am in. And now what is it, and I know what it is to be poor, and I know what it is to be rich. I have gone through many things and experienced many things, both to be filled and to hunger, both to have plenty and in need. I can do all things through Messiah, the one giving me the strength. Wow, that's the way it is. Don't worry about tomorrow. Don't worry, you know, the nations worry. What will we eat and what will we drink and what will we wear? Look at the birds of the heaven, you know. They don't gather and sow, and yet your heavenly Father takes care of them. Aren't you worth more than a sparrow? So Yahweh knows it. He knows it. We have to live every day in this. It's Satan that wants to put in your mind all these thoughts of disbelief. It's Satan that wants you to dig up your golden calf and carry it into the congregation. 2 Corinthians 12, in verse 7. The Apostle Paul is speaking, he says, and by superabundance of the revelations, he got amazing revelations from Elohim, that I not be made arrogant, a thorn in the flesh was given to me, a messenger of Satan, that he might buffet me, that I not be made haughty, prideful. Beyond this, I entreated our Master 3 times that it depart from me. And he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will rather gladly boast in my weaknesses, that the power of the Messiah may rest upon me. Because of this, I am pleased in weaknesses, in insults, in dire needs, in persecutions, in distresses for the sake of Messiah. For when I am physically weak, then I am spiritually strong. So nothing wrong with asking Yahweh to heal you. Nothing wrong with being anointed. We should be. But you know what? Like he says, If you ask several times and Yahweh didn't do it, apparently it's not his will. Now start asking him, how can I glorify you through this trial? How can I glorify you through this sickness? How can I bring more to faith through it? Because, you know, when you see a person that maybe is going through a sickness or a cancer or whatever, and they have the faith and they believe and they're not worried about it, they can bring more people to faith than even if they were healed. Because once they're healed and people are seeing them walking around, it's like, oh, of course they're happy, they're healed. It's easy to be happy when you're healed. But it's not as easy to be happy and have the same spirit of joy and zeal when you're going through the infirmity. But that's the greater witness. The greater witness is once we're going through it, for Yahweh to see it. My grace is enough. My grace is enough. Is His grace enough in your life? Do you need more than that? Are you like the Israelites, always looking for something more? We want this, we want that, we don't have enough. Or is it, my grace is sufficient? Because every day of your life, I can't promise you, you might have a day that you don't have a place to sleep. I can't promise you, you might have a day where you don't have food. But I can promise you 1,000% you will never have a day where Yahweh's grace is not upon you. As long as you stay in His faith. As long as you continue in the faith and you don't deny Him. If you deny Him, whoa, woe is you. Like I said, it'll be worse than not having His grace in your life. 2 Timothy 3, because the reason why this is so important is we're living in the most evil time man has ever seen. 2 Timothy 3, and you know, Paul wrote this, but I'll guarantee you if he was resurrected this second, he'd still be shocked at what he sees. He couldn't imagine it could ever be, you know. And I read this as a young believer 30-something years ago. You know, there's 16 or 18 different adjectives to albedism. I'm like, okay, enough, we get the point. And now I'm like, boy, you need to add a few more as we see how worse it's gotten. But know this, in the last days, disastrous times will be upon us. For men will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, braggarts, arrogant, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, ungrateful, just like the Israelites, wicked, without natural feeling, addicted to lust, slanderers, without self-control, savage, haters of good, traitors, hasty, boasters, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of Elohim, having a form of righteousness. They all want to walk around the Torah, but they're not living it. Having a form of righteousness, but denying the power of it. Even turn away from these. Don't watch their internet site. Don't fellowship with them. Don't invite them over. Turn away from these. For of these are those creeping into houses and leading silly women captive, the ones having been heaped with sins, being led away by various lusts, always striving to learn, but never being able to come to a full knowledge of the truth. I've met so many people through my life like that, and it's sad. It's sad where you have the answers to their questions, and they still always, well, I'm still not sure. Always learning, but never coming to the knowledge of the truth. Now, as Jannes and Jambres stood up against Moses, so do these also withstand the truth. Men of corrupt minds and far off from the faith, just like we were talking about. Just like Satan had his false ministers then, you know, the priests that were coming against Moses and Yahweh, you have the same thing today. The ministers of Satan, the ministers of darkness, the ministers of doubt and fear that he's trying to bring your life in false doctrine, they're still there the same way. And sad enough, this isn't the world he's talking about. This is believers. This is believers in the end time, or so-called believers. You know, not true believers, but so-called believers. But like I said, each of us have had our golden calf. Now's the time to change. Let's go back to Exodus 32. We're going to end here soon. But let's look at the result if you don't get rid of your golden calf. Exodus 32. And we'll continue. We read the first 10 verses. I'll start in verse 15. This is when Moses comes down the mountain and he sees the calf. And Moses turned and went down from the mountain, the two tablets of the testimony in his hand. Tablets written on their two sides, on this and on that side, they were written. And the tablets were the work of Elohim. The writing was the writing of Elohim. It was engraved on the tablets. So here it is. He has the pure, unadulterated word of Yahweh on one end. And what did they do on the other end? They took the golden calf from Egypt. They took the things in their life. And they're rejecting the truth of Yahweh. And they're saying, we want the golden calf. And Joshua heard the voice of the people and their shouting, and he said to Moses, a sound of war is in the camp. And he said, it is not the sound of a cry of might or the sound of a cry of defeat. I am hearing the sound of singing. And it happened as he came near to the camp and saw the calf and the dancers, the anger of Moses glowed, and he threw the tablets from his hands and broke them before the mountain. They weren't worthy of the word of Yahweh because they were trying to bring the paganism of Egypt with them. And he took the calf which he had made and burned it with fire and ground it until it was fine. Then he scattered it on the face of the water and he made the sons of Israel to drink. And that's pretty interesting. Because remember, if you don't get rid of your golden calf, what is that showing? It's going to bring bitterness to your life. Your golden calf, it may seem, you know, like your teraphim, your household idol that's getting you through something. But I'm telling you, it won't. It will not. And that's the point, you know. In my life, going back way many years ago, was sports. I used it as a mechanism to, you know, working all week and this and that. And, oh, I love just to relax on a Sunday and watch sports. And I used to rationalize it. It doesn't say in the Bible you can't watch sports. Where does it say that? Where does it say thou shalt not watch football? Until one day, I stopped asking the question, is it sin? Because I used to say, is it a sin? Show me in the Bible where it says it's a sin to watch football. And I started asking the question, is it holy? And I got a totally different answer. Once I asked the question, is it holy? I saw these grown men over here, you know, with plastic on, banging each other. And I said, this is ridiculous. This is vile. Not only is it holy, it's vile and it's ridiculous. And you know what? There's no good to it. Because as soon as it's over, even if you think that your team won, it starts all over again. There's no lasting happiness to this. It's just a big waste of time. And it's the same with anybody's golden calf. Whatever your golden calf is, you've got to get rid of it because it will bring bitterness to you, as we see here. And Moses said to Aaron, what has this people done to you that has made you come to this great sin? And Aaron said, let not the anger of my master glow. You know the people that it is evil. And they said to me, make for us gods who will go before us. As for Moses, the man who caused us to go from the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him. And I said to him, whoever has gold, let him break it off. And they gave it to me, and I cast it in the fire, and this calf came out. And Moses saw the people that they were naked. We talked about this yesterday. They left their covering, for Aaron had left them naked for scornful shaming among the enemies. So if you don't have your covering, you're left exposed to the world. And Moses stood in the gate of the camp and said, who is for Yahweh? Come to me. And all the sons of Levi assembled to him. And he said to them, so says Yahweh, Elohim of Israel, each one put his sword in his thigh, pass to and fro from the gate to gate in the camp, and each one kill his brother, and each one his neighbor, and each one his kindred. And like I said, sometimes it's people's families, and mostly unconverted relatives. You know, I've seen brethren that went through all of their money, all of their inheritance, all of their retirement on unconverted children. And then in the end, the unconverted children cursed them. You know? And then when money was needed for brethren that are suffering, we can't give an offering. What is your golden calf? He who puts brother, sister, you know, father, mother before me is not worthy of me. They're not worthy of me. And like I said, the fact that I love Yahweh more doesn't mean I love my family less. He doesn't say you can't love your family, but it's idolatry to put your family before him. And it's a golden calf. It's a golden calf. And the sons of Levi did according to the word of Moses, and about 3,000 men of the people fell that day. And Moses said, fill your hand today for Yahweh, since each one has been against his son and against his brother, in order to give you a blessing today. And it happened on the morrow, Moses said to the people, you have sinned a great sin, and now I will go up to Yahweh. Perhaps I can make atonement for your sin. And Moses went back to Yahweh and said, oh, this people has sinned a great sin, and they have made for themselves gods of gold. And now, if you will, lift up their sin. And if not, I pray you blot me from your book, which you have written. And Yahweh said to Moses, whoever has sinned against me, I will blot from my book. And now go, lead the people to that place I have spoken to you. Behold, my messenger will go before your face. And in the day of my visitation, I will visit their sin on them, as we saw. And Yahweh plagued the people, because they made the calf which Aaron made. So again, unless we get rid of our golden calf, we're only bringing plagues to ourselves and everybody else around us. We must be mature enough to take responsibility for our actions. And that's why we have to look at our life. We have to see what the golden calf is that we haven't been giving up. There might be bitter water to drink from it, but we got to get rid of it. We got to be mature enough to get rid of it. We got to break whatever destruction it's been causing on us and others. And then we got to move ahead in faith and get the blessing that's waiting for us. Last scripture I want to go over is Philippians 3. Philippians, the third chapter. Because, you know, another thing, if you're holding on to a golden calf, you'll never move ahead. You'll never move ahead in the high calling of Yahweh. And unfortunately, it grieves me sometimes when I see brethren getting together, and instead of worshiping Yahweh, instead of praising Yahweh, instead of talking to things, they're talking about their former life. They're talking about, oh yeah, when we used to drink the beers, when we used to do this, when we used to do that. And it's like, wow, you know what you're doing? Yahweh says he puts our sins as the east to the west. He forgets them. And now you're bringing them back to him. You're bringing back things to Yahweh that he's already forgave you for. Shame on us. Why on earth would we be boasting in things of our former life that we should be ashamed of? I can tell you that there isn't very many things of my calling before I came to Yahweh that I want to talk about. And there aren't very many things that I'm proud of my life before coming to Yahweh. I may talk about my upbringing. You know, I had some mentors in my life, uncles and whatnot, my dad that helped me to be a good person. But I don't want to talk about the things I did in the world. Those are things I want to forget. And this is what the Apostle Paul tells us here. Philippians 3 and verse 4. He says, "And yet I might place reliance on the flesh, for if anyone thinks that his reliance should be on the flesh, I might do so more than he. For I was circumcised on the eighth day, being of the race of Israel, of the tribe of Benjamin, a Hebrew of Hebrews, according to the Torah, a Pharisee, according to zeal, persecuting the congregation, according to the standard of righteousness in the Torah, being blameless. But these things which were once a gain to me, I have counted a loss for the sake of Messiah. But no, rather, I also count all things to be lost because of the excellency of the knowledge of Messiah Yeshua, my master, for whose sake I have suffered the loss of all things, and I count them to be trash, that I might gain Messiah and be found in him, not having my own righteousness of law, but through the faith of Messiah, having the righteousness of Elohim on faith. And through this righteousness, that I may know Yeshua and the power of his resurrection, and be a partaker of his sufferings, even to a death like his, if somehow I may attain to the resurrection from the dead. Not that I already received, or already have been perfected," so he knew the dead are asleep, they're not in heaven, "but I press on, if I also may lay hold as much as I also was laid hold of by Messiah Yeshua. Brothers, I do not count myself to have reached the goal, but this one thing I do, forgetting the things behind, and stretching forward to those things before, leaving the golden calf behind, I press toward the goal to receive the prize of victory of the highest calling of Elohim in Messiah Yeshua. Then as many as are perfect, think about these things. And if you think anything differently, Elohim will also reveal this to you. Yet as to where we have arrived, walk by the same rule, being of the same mind. Be fellow imitators of me, brothers, and consider those walking this way, even as you have us for a pattern. For many walk as enemies to the torture stake of Messiah, of whom I often told you, and now even weeping I say it, whose end is destruction, whose God is their belly, and whose glory is in their shame, the ones thinking on earthly things. They won't let that golden calf go. They bring it with them from place to place. But our citizenship is in heaven, from where we also wait for a Savior, the Master Yeshua Messiah, who will transform our body of humiliation to the likeness of his glorious body, according to his mighty power, to be able to subject all things under himself." So like I said, the golden calf is made from gold. The golden calf is made from the world. The golden calf is all the things of the world we've been going over. 1 John 2:15-17. "Love not the world and the things of the world. All the things of the world are not of the Father." And that's the golden calf. And like I said, when we look at the Israelites' example, the golden calf was just the end of it. That was the cherry on the pie for them. But we see all along from the beginning, from the day they left Egypt, they murmured, they complained, they never had appreciation for what Yahweh was doing in their life. And then ultimately, because they didn't leave their golden calf behind, they rebuilt it. They rebuilt it, and they just called the calf Yahweh. So what we need to do is, like it says, We have to forget the things behind. We have to move ahead. Because like I said, the greatest work is still ahead. The greatest time in our life is still ahead. The kingdom is right before us. The things that Yahweh has, it's such an exciting time that we're entering for each of us. And for everybody, it'll be different because all of us lives are different. But we have to look ahead to the great calling as a Melchizedek priest. We have to be preparing ourselves every day for the kingdom that's coming. We have to realize our citizenship is in heaven. It's not on this earth. And we have to be growing in a spirit of thankfulness every day of our life in leaving the golden calf behind. Yahweh bless.